Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 573 for comics originally released on August 1st, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is Adventures of the Super Sons number 1. This is a 12-issue maxi series that takes place between Super Sons 16, the final issue of that, and the Superman Special number 1 that came out, a month ago or so now?
Yeah, I think it was about that.
I had mixed feelings on this. I had enjoyed most of the original run of Super Sons, some issues a lot more than others. Like the Bizarro Kid one didn't do a whole lot for me necessarily. This, it felt like they didn't totally capture the tone, style, the spark, or whatever from the original series. They came close, but I don't know, there just felt like there was something missing. Is it just me, or do you have a similar kind of a feeling?
Well, actually, I have no feeling. No, the reason why I heard you and Drew reviewing this, this was back when I wasn't reading this title. And so I picked this up when it came out in an omnibus, and I have not cracked it open yet. So I'm just reading this one as it's coming out.
Interesting. So you're going to read this and then go back, read the first volume.
Yeah. I bought that. I didn't know. I think they solicited it and they didn't mention this title was coming out when that was already solicited several months ago. So yeah, but then I'm going to go back and read that. So then I'll be able to see which one I like better at that point.
I'll be curious, because sometimes there's a whichever you hit first, you like the best, sometimes not, depending, you know what I mean?
Exactly. So
okay.
This one was good for me. I mean, I do think the characters seem different than I have been portrayed in the past, though.
Yeah, it's hard for me to put my finger on it exactly. I think with, like, Damian, they're showing him as being this really brilliant, like, overachiever or anything, and not quite having as much of the attitude as he does, like when we read Teen Titans last week.
Yeah, I like that attitude. Damian's slowly becoming my favorite character in the DC Universe because of that edginess that he brings. I just love that.
Mm-hmm. He's this pint-size know-it-all, and he's got enough to back it up to be really annoying.
Yeah, but the way this came off is, not knowing a lot about the character, is he not supposed to be, like, one of the smartest characters in the DC Universe?
I don't think he's... I wouldn't put him as one of the smartest. I mean, he's smarter than average, and certainly way smarter than average for his age.
Okay, because he came off as a downright genius in here, almost like a Moon Girl type, but when I was reading it, I was like, oh, I didn't know that was how he was.
I don't think that's how he is. Now, maybe I'm misremembering something or something like that, but in my mind, he was raised by the League of Assassins.
Okay.
Talia al Ghul is his mother. And do you really think the League of Assassins puts a whole lot of credence on book smarts?
No, I think it'd be on the martial arts, not the book smarts.
And even if it was on the book smarts, I think they would be very selective. Chemistry, how to kill things, you know, ballistics, things of that sort.
Exactly.
Versus he did a...
It was a paper that he had written up. I'm trying to remember what the heck it was. The final essay on Tegmark's interpretation of Schrodinger's whatever it was. It seemed like it was something like philosophy.
Yeah, Schrodinger's cat, I'm guessing what it is, and the quantum suicide or whatever. I don't think he'd have a 120-page college-level thesis out of this kid.
Yeah, that was the part, and not even knowing the character that well, it didn't seem like something I'd seen previously from him. I mean, he of course you have to be smart to be a super... Well, you don't have to, but it helps, especially if you don't have any real super abilities and you're fighting crime against big characters. It helps to be really intelligent. But yeah, I'd never seen that side. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
And again, I don't discount the intelligence. It's the studiousness, the sit down and write 120 pages.
Yeah, and that kind of bugs me with a lot of things. People automatically assume if someone has a high IQ, they know everything. No, it just means they have the ability to learn everything. It doesn't mean they know everything.
I always differentiate smarts from knowledge.
Yes.
Somebody who's a know-it-all knows literally a lot of things. It's like they've memorized the encyclopedia or whatever. Doesn't mean they can do anything with that information.
Exactly.
That's where you got to be smart, and that's the ability to synthesize what to do when you have information, how to problem solve, things like that. And certainly, I think Damian is incredibly strategic. He's an incredible gifted fighter, etc., and quick on the uptake. But again, the way he was portrayed here was almost Vulcan-like.
Yes, yes. And that was different for me, not even having read this character very much. That was very off to me.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a big deal, but I noticed it. You know, it annoyed me a little.
And on the flip side, they made John look almost stupid.
I think putting John Kent next to Damian Wayne, he's going to look a little stupid.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
He's a more normal kid, therefore a little bit more, you know, sidetracked, distracted, whatever. A little bit more of a, I don't say a goofball, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, a normal kid.
A normal kid versus the highly disciplined Damian.
Yeah.
So there were aspects here where I thought the characterizations, they weren't bad, but they felt a little off. And this is a flashback tale, so we know they're going to be okay at the end of this.
Exactly.
That kind of cuts the suspense and whatnot a bit. And the threat they've got here, I really, you know, when we get to the reveal of that, I'm like, that's where they went?
Yeah,
I was underwhelmed.
Now, are those characters that have popped up before?
Not that I recall, but they seemed like the sort of characters that would have.
Okay, because, you know, when I saw that, I was underwhelmed to the point where, like, maybe it's just because the last two DC books we read were, it seems like there's a lot of these almost retread characters where, okay, if I'm the Flash, I have to have a Kid Flash or Superboy. There's no normals that are born here. You know, Batman has, you know, Damian or whoever has this kid, or it's kind of weird. They all have the exact same abilities and powers. I'm just like, that gets a little bit tired for me.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm not exactly like my father. You know, I'm a different person, and I'm not going to have the same abilities, same powers, the same fitness level. Genetics just don't work that way, that we're exactly alike.
Whereas here, the genetics run crazy true, even though at least half these characters don't have innate powers.
Exactly. That was like, that thing kind of bugged me a little bit about that. I was just like, all right, a whole new cast. All right.
I take it that these are characters from elsewhere, and not, while they are derivative, they're like in a multiversal kind of way, if you know what I mean?
That would make more sense. Maybe it could even be like a young version of those characters.
Yeah.
That would make way more sense, and I would like that more.
Yeah, I think they could have set that up better, but they'd already gone to that well with, again, the Bizarro world.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, that left me a little underwhelming. That's the one thing I really didn't care for, was that little twist at the end. I was like, oh, okay. It was more like not a big buildup.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. I thought it was trite, cliche, and uninspired. But, I mean, we've seen these kinds of characters before, and we'll see them again. It felt like what we've done before, like I said, with the Bizarro stuff. I expect better from this, but my biggest concern is this is a 12-issue limited series. I don't know if we're going to get this arc and that's it, or this arc and another arc, or what.
Yeah, I don't know either, because there's not much you can do with 12 issues, and he's out. And I'm also wondering if, did Tomasi write the first series, the first 18 issues?
I believe so.
I wonder if he just kind of ran out of things to write about these characters. I don't know if he wrapped it up and he said, oh, by the way, or maybe I could come out with these 12 issues and thought up some more story. I don't know, but it seemed like this was a very popular thing. You guys loved it. And I don't want to come off as I hate this book, because I don't have a frame of reference, but I enjoyed this, but it did seem a little bit off in areas.
Yeah, and that's about where I am. I didn't hate it. I liked it. And I can almost see where the next issue is going to start up for the first page or two.
Yeah, me too.
I think there's a definite fake out that's happening there at the end. And it's going to be, oh, you thought this. Well, really, it's that, you know, sort of a thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which cliffhanger ending, go figure.
Exactly. So, I mean, it, for me, you know, looking at this coming in, I thought it had great art. I liked the writer. It just seemed like the characters are a little bit off, but not having the reference of how they were before, I thought maybe this is how they were. I just didn't like the buildup to that end thing that didn't make me excited just because I was like another cast that's almost like replicas.
Yeah. I think you should read the first volume and see what you think, because I think it's got some much better stories. And there were a few aspects here that didn't make sense. Like Damien and John are going to be kind of left to their own devices for a couple of weeks. Yeah, Alfred may look in, but they're kind of on their own.
Yeah,
that's a bit of a complete, not a bit. It is an absolute turnaround, I think, from the first volume.
Exactly. No fatherly figure there. They're just kind of on their own.
So, I don't know. And there's one or other things that seem a little telegraphed. John's got a new belt that was part of Superman's costume. And I'm like, nothing happens with it here, but I expect it'll be a plot point at some point.
Yeah, that they didn't just set that up for nothing. That's almost like set up for, you know, a character to appear in the future.
Yeah, but the problem with that is it'll play better in trade than it does in the single issues, because it could literally be months before that pays off.
It's true. Yeah, like you're saying, that could come out 8 months from now, 6 months from now, and we may have forgotten this plot point, or it may be a refresher. Oh, yeah, I remember 6 or 8 months ago when that happened.
Or potentially 12, if this arc goes the full 12 issues.
It's true. It could be at the very end.
This was essentially this issue setting up the whole limited series, or at least the first half of it or something. It wasn't bad, but they've done better with these characters.
Yeah, even with Damien and Superboy, I read him in Superman, the last volume of Superman before Bendis came over. I liked him better in Superman there than the portrayal here, and I like Damien in Teen Titans way more.
Yeah, I think particularly the one we just reviewed last week was a much better version of Damien than this.
Yeah, that's the part that almost got him to, I think he might be one of my favorite characters now in the DC Universe just because of that swagger and that attitude. I love it.
I think that's really what I left this with, is it wasn't bad, but like I said, they've done better with these characters.
Yeah. And like I was saying, I enjoyed the art in here too. I think the art was really decent. I liked it. So what were you going to end up giving this book?
I'm going to go with a B- on this.
Okay. And having no frame of reference, I enjoyed it for what it was. I went with a B+.
Okay. Again, I'm going to be curious when you get a chance to read that omnibus of the first volume, what you think of that.
Yeah, definitely. Because especially if you think it's better, it probably is. Because there were a few things off here. I was like, that just seemed off. But I thought maybe that's how they were portrayed before.
Let me put it this way. There were parts of that run that when it was better, it was way better. And there are other parts that it wasn't better.
Okay.
There were one or two arcs here and there that didn't quite work for me. But man, when they got in the groove, they really got there.
Yeah, and I think it was Drew, one of his favorites at the time. He loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so that got me. I was like, wow, I want to buy it. But you guys were already so far into it, and it had already kind of passed me by that I was happy when they came out with the omnibus. I'm like, I'm going to snag that.
You get a fair amount of collected editions, don't you?
I really do, because I laid off of comics for such a long time, a big period of my life, and that now they're coming out with these big omnibus chunks where I was buying collections on eBay to get caught up on stuff. It's so convenient. I can say, oh, here's the Garth Ennis Punisher Max. You know, I can get two big, you know, things, and it's all there together. And it's really kind of cool. I like the layout. So I've been buying a lot of it, especially those big bulky omnibus. I love those.
I can understand that. I've picked up a couple of, like, the Superboy and the Legion of Superhero ones and some stuff like that. I don't get many, but I do get some.
Yeah, and actually, Eric will tell me sometimes. He'll say, hey, check this one out, because it's good stuff to get caught up on and to know about. And so I picked up even, like, Justice League International, and I never read it, don't know anything about it, but he's like, hey, this would be a good one for you to check out. I was like, all right, cool, I'll read it.
I love recommendations like that. That's great. And again, Eric and James at Cowabunga they're knowledgeable about the stuff. They pay attention, and they're good with suggestions.
Yeah. So I'll be reading that.
Cool. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, and I'm interested to see how you like this.
This is Captain America number 2. This is written by, and I'm probably going to butcher his name, so I apologize in advance, Ta-Nehisi Coates.
I've heard it pronounced Ta-Nehisi? I don't know.
I said I was going to butcher it.
Ta-Nehisi or Ta-Nehisi, I don't know.
That guy, the writer, how about that?
That works.
And I mean,
T.
Yeah, T. I mean no disrespect. I've read his Black Panther stuff. He's, of course, a prose writer and done a lot of stuff there. Have not read any of his stuff there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, me neither.
I read the first issue prior to reading this, and I'll say from the get-go, there were aspects of the first issue that didn't work great for me, and some of that really carried into this issue. This is dealing with the fallout of Secret Empire, and that ended like a year ago.
Yeah, and I kind of, I guess they brought in Mark Waid for that short little run on Captain America, and he was almost the palate cleanser after the Nick Spencer and Secret Empire thing, but now they're kind of revisiting that well. Because, you know, technically, Waid's run was more like he's just driving around the country, getting back to his roots and who he is, and people still love him, and he's still a great guy. But here, it's like all the stuff that happens kind of coming back to haunt him.
Yeah, it felt like this almost should take place before the Mark Waid run.
Exactly, because it would have flowed a little bit better, because you had basically, like, I don't remember how many issues Waid was on there, but let's say 12 issues or 10 issues. It's just kind of weird going back.
Yeah, I mean, this would have worked much better for me if it had been right after Secret Empire ended, not a year later.
Exactly. So, it's cool, but it was a little bit jarring as far as, like, we went really positive, overly negative, overly positive, and now we're back to dealing with the negativity that came from that first story.
And there was some stuff with the beginning action sequence where it was kind of all action, no real dialogue or anything, and it made for an odd start to this issue.
Yeah, one thing I was actually getting from this, Ta-Nehisi, when he was first writing Black Panther, he used so much verbiage and so much exposition that it pulled me out of the story, and I would just, it's almost like he didn't expect the words or the pictures to be there to explain what he was explaining in words. And it just became too cumbersome to read almost. A lot of people are Black Panther. Here I feel like he's gotten his comic footing underneath him. He's writing for pictures, which helps.
I think he's maybe overcompensated a little on that one scene, and I don't think he's gotten to the point where he's able to balance the words in the pictures.
Yeah, he's probably still working on it and still getting his footing, because this one seemed very decompressed compared to what he used to write.
I mean, I agree with your assessment of the first, like, issue or two of Black Panther, but there were a couple of pages here where there's a cinematic aspect that would work as a TV show or a movie, but doesn't always play right on the comic page.
Oh, really?
You know, when you've got the talking heads and it goes on just a little too long and it gets a little awkward on the page or something like that?
Yeah.
But you could see exactly how this would have been filmed?
Yeah, and I had it on that page, like, right around the centerfold, that kind of what you're talking about. Yeah, I can see this being a TV series with that happening, back and forth, the camera angles.
Yeah, and nothing right or wrong, but I think with any writer, once they get a couple of more, you know, comic book pages under their belt, they get a little bit better rhythm on it and stuff like that. The guy knows how to put together a story. I don't particularly love the direction he's taking this story. It's a bit dark and whatnot. And, I mean, again, this series is starting off on a fairly negative note. And I just don't think that's the right choice.
Yeah, I kind of, when I was reading this, I got the vibe, and I don't know this for sure, that he's addressing stuff that's, like, almost going on in our country. You know, he's starting to tap into, just like Nick Spencer did, maybe political overtones and stuff that's happening in there. But he's doing it in a very subtle way, where Nick Spencer was very in your face. But it does come off as dark, you know, the tearing apart of the fabric of society. Who can you trust? You know, do you trust these people? And so you see that stuff, and that's very heavy. That's a very heavy topic.
But I guess in my mind, Captain America wouldn't struggle with that. He would hit it front and center. He would have come up with something. He would have assembled a group of people, and they would be united. They would stand for the right thing. They would, you know, be counteracting the negativity they see in society, not wallowing in it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because he does seem to wallow a little bit, and it was kind of weird seeing Thunderbolt Ross and some of the things he said in here. You know, like, your generation's gone, you know, we nobody's applauding you anymore. I'm like, man, talk about harsh. It's like, that was a very brutal just scene that played out with the words that were spoken at that time.
Even with everything that had happened with Secret Empire, Captain America is Captain America. He exudes at some level a trust me, like me, I am a good guy kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
So for people to be railing on him like this, I mean, I get it given the situation, but it's like he's almost got a subliminal superpower that makes him somehow immune to this.
Yeah, that's true. And one thing I don't like, this is one of the things I did not like about this comic, is they have the other guy locked up in prison. So they know it's not Steve Rogers, Captain America. So I don't know where this distrust and hatred is still coming from, because apparently this happened a while back.
Well, and there was the question of, well, how do we know which one we've got in jail and which one we've got here? It's like, well, I think the one with, like, the swastika in jail?
Yeah, the one with the big Hydra tattoo or swastika or whatever it was on his chest.
Maybe it was the Hydra thing, whichever, yeah.
Yeah.
But the one that's clearly marked himself as the bad guy.
That's pretty telling right there.
I would think.
Yeah, so it's like, that part, yeah, revisiting that. The only thing I can think is maybe Ta-Nehisi is trying to retouch the subject in a different light, and I don't know if that's good or bad, because he's going on with these nuke characters that happened in the first issue, this army of nukes.
Yeah.
Which are kind of like the, I don't know, you could see him as like almost like extreme right-wing terrorist. So I don't know if he's trying to take this more political down that road with our current environment. And that's something he have to tread very lightly on, because you don't want to alienate people.
Yeah. Well, and those nuke characters are, maybe not these particular ones, but other ones like them were last seen in Weapon X that I think Drew and I reviewed a while back.
Oh, yeah. So I've always, Nuke is kind of an interesting character, but, you know, in the current political climate, I was just, I don't know, maybe I was reading too much into this. I'm like, I wonder if he's really trying to go back and really take another political slant at this, you know, but do it as like an allegory, not too literal in your face, where you can draw out meaning if you want to. So I've been kind of reading that and trying to read between the lines.
It could be. I wanted something a little more hopeful and optimistic. And
this is not that.
This is not that. This is definitely not that.
Yeah, I think the Secret Empire went on for so long that we really enjoyed the palate cleanser we got, and now we feel like we're going back to that old well.
Yeah, the fact that it feels like so much of a regression is annoying. And I'll be honest, the reveal at the end struck me as a bad direction to go in for this writer.
Yeah, I could see where you're coming from on that, because I agree.
It may turn out to be great stuff, but there were some things I liked in this. I didn't think it was a horrible issue, but the timing is off. The pacing feels wrong. I mean, this reminds me on how, again, it's been a year since Secret Empire, and when I was a kid reading comics, a year ago was like the last JLA-JSA crossover. A lot happened between those.
Yeah, this was a long time ago, and it's kind of weird to go back. This should have been written right after Nick Spencer's run.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think it would have been cool, because we would have been expecting and this subject to be dealt with, whereas Mark Waid, it kind of just went, okay, that never happened. Here we are. We're going really positive. I mean, it was touched on, but very lightly.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that quite possibly, depending how long this run lasts, in hindsight, it may read better out of order.
Yeah, I could see that. I would, if I was telling somebody who's a new reader coming in, I owned a shop, I was like Eric, and I said, hey, you want to read Captain America? And let's say they like that Nick Spencer run. Read Nick Spencer, then read this one by Ta-Nehisi. Then, you know, a little bit lighter, just for fun, read the Mark Waid stuff. You can read that before or after.
Depending where this leaves off, it may read better afterwards. I don't know. It's just kind of bizarre.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm hoping for good things, and I feel like the writer is getting a little more writing prowess with comic books. He's a great writer, of course. He's a novelist. Like you said, I haven't read that stuff, but I think he is becoming a better writer. From the first Black Panther was almost unreadable to me.
I would agree. I just think there's a little overuse of captions. Some panels or pages have a lot of dialogue. Some have virtually none. There's a balance that the writer's still working to get.
Yeah, he's still working. He's still working on it. And I'm hoping he gets it right.
I think if we were to look back at this writer a year from now, we'd see great improvements. I have no doubt about that.
I agree.
And hopefully we'd have moved off this current story arc.
Yes, I agree with that too. And by the way, just a side note, Lynell Francis Yu. I actually really liked his art in here. Really good.
I felt it was a little stiff, but I think that's just kind of my take on his style.
Okay, makes sense.
He's a good artist. It's just not one of the ones that I necessarily love.
No, he's not my favorite, but I think he did a good job.
Yeah, I would say he did all right. There were some panels that worked better. There were a few where there was literally black pits where the eyes should be.
And
the loving look between a few characters felt cold and distant.
Yeah, the eyes were definitely lacking. I'm looking at Thunderbolt Ross when you said that. He had black eyes.
So there's a couple of things there. It tells the story, though.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm going to go with a B- on this. It's got some stuff that's good. It's just I thought they'd move past this dystopic or this dark version of his reputation.
Yeah, I believe it or not, I gave it the same score. I went with a B-. I was just a little bit disappointed that we're going back and rehashing this thing that happened. But I guess, you know, Marvel wants it to be a big altering thing for Steve Rogers, so it's going to continue.
I guess. I think it's a mistake.
Yeah, I agree.
Shall we move over to our other book?
Yes.
This is Project Superpowers number 1. And this is by Dynamite Entertainment. This is taking a bunch of Golden Age characters that fell into the public domain and about 10 years ago, involving Alex Ross, who did the redesign of some of the costumes or whatever. They did a volume or two of it back then. The zero issue of this title kind of recaps the important part of that, which is how these characters from World War II wound up in the current day.
Yes.
And this is really the first Project Superpowers series in about a decade. There have been characters in this universe that have had titles.
Yeah, I think I read one by the Black Terror.
Yeah.
I think they had a little, like a 4-issue run or something. And that was kind of my only, you know, seeing these characters on page. That's the first touch I had with those characters.
Did you ever read any of the Terra Obscura stuff, I think it was, from America's Best Comics?
I did not read that.
Okay, it was either that or Wildstorm. Anyways, that's another take on very similar characters, if not identical characters.
Okay, and seeing this team, I kind of, it's interesting seeing the Golden Age characters. There's a few of them that have some repetitive powers, but overall it was interesting.
I enjoy this kind of stuff because I like these characters. I mean, it's funny because we're seeing a revival of early Golden Age characters is seen through a more modern lens, which gives this world a familiar yet different feel to it because we recognize the archetypes, even if these aren't the versions we're most familiar with.
Exactly.
You know, so there's a sense of familiarity and comfort while new and different.
Exactly. I mean, you get to a character named Samson, and he felt very like Hercules to me from Marvel Comics.
Exactly.
You get to the Black Terror, and it's kind of more Superman-ish, you know, or something like that.
Almost more of a Batman type.
Batman, but with the super strength and almost invulnerable. So, yeah, it's kind of like a mix between the two because he's not completely invulnerable.
Well, again, you get the sense of the archetype, even if it's not necessarily a straight one for one.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see that all these companies were creating almost ripoffs of each other. So it's very interesting seeing these. And I'm sorry, but go ahead.
Well, like the Scarab is essentially Blue Beetle.
Oh, Blue Beetle. I was trying to figure out if that's supposed to be an Iron Man type thing. But yeah, Blue Beetle makes more sense.
So it's one of those things where I like the different take on a superhero universe and one that's fully populated.
Yeah.
Not just, oh, here's a few characters and they're starting out or whatever. And there's a Captain America fish out of water, you know, time displacement aspect on here too. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, definitely. Now the writer on this was Rob Williams. And the one thing that I'm reading from him right now is he's been writing Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like his Suicide Squad. It's not like one of my favorites, but I keep reading it. I buy it every single month. So I actually, believe it or not, I don't know why, but I sort of enjoyed this more than I enjoyed Suicide Squad that he writes.
I can understand that. I'm a little behind on Suicide Squad, but I think there is a aspect of this property that's a little, well, obviously a little bit more heroic than a you know, group of supervillains, you know, pressed into service by their government against their wishes.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things here I'm not sure where they're going, like with the death-defying devil. Something's clearly going on with that character.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what's going on with him. A man possessed, apparently. I don't know what that is.
I think there's definitely possession, but did you read the Zero issue?
I did, but I read it like a month ago, so I didn't reread it, so I'm kind of vague on it right now.
There was an aspect that they reveal there that make me question if it's a man possessed or just a possession.
Okay. Yeah, and I remember reading that, and it wasn't very long. It was a short issue, but yeah, I remember there was something about him.
I read it right before reading this, and it did a good job of resetting the scene and the stage for these characters.
And it does help to go back and read. I read Captain America 1 before doing the review on Captain America 2. So, but I couldn't find my the Project Superpower, so I was like, eh, whatever.
I could see where that would make it harder to read.
Yeah, but I'm also like, do you like the idea of taking a normal character and maybe changing that person?
I'm okay with that, and that sort of a thing has been done before, and I'm trying to remember if it was done, I think it was actually in Terra Obscura, which is, again, a very similar-ish property, but a bit more light and uplifting. And actually, if I recall correctly, in a fairly similar vein to what they're doing here. I didn't have any problem with it. The minute we saw this character in the plane and we're getting introduced to her and learning more about her, I'm like, well, she's going to become important fairly soon.
Exactly. I'm like, why are they focusing on this person? What's going on? Oh, yeah, there it is.
And there's an aspect, if you like the JSA, the Justice Society and such, those characters of this originated in the same time frame as these characters. And I think what they're doing here at the end with that one kind of civilian character, if you will, is like when they brought in new people into the JSA. It's like you now have a legacy aspect. You've got old school heroes, and now you've got some modern people mixing into that.
Oh, yeah. I like that Dynamite's kind of tapped into these Golden Age heroes and made them more relevant. And they did that with some other things. They have some of those gold key characters. I think they have like something Captain Solar or Mr. Solar, Man of the Atom. I can't remember what his name is.
Yeah, Solar, Man of the Atom. It's the gold key characters, yeah, that were the core of the Valiant Universe originally.
Yeah, but I think I like this group more than those. So these, I don't know why, but I kind of enjoy this. Even though it's more like a introduction, here's a plot thread, but it's more like here's all the characters coming together and working together. But I enjoyed it. And for Dynamite art, this is on the better side of Dynamite art. Not the best, but on the better side.
I would agree with that. And if you haven't read the first two volumes of Project Superpowers, I do recommend that.
Oh, so good read. I was asking Eric about, they came out with like the omnibus collecting the first two volumes. I may go back and pick that up just to get caught up on it.
I would recommend it. I thought it was some really good stuff when it came out. I also enjoyed how at the end of the individual issues, and I'm pretty sure they have these in the trade, they would do just a one-page kind of shot of like 8 or 12 of these characters, just so you get the lineup and the costumes and stuff like that, just for reference or whatever.
Yeah, so having no frame of reference and coming into this other than reading a little four-issue series with Black Terror, I thought it was a cool thing. I enjoyed the characters, and I want to know more about the characters, and I liked it. So it made me want to read a little bit more. So that's a good thing, reading this coming out with no frame of reference. They're brand new characters to me.
No, I agree with that entirely. I think they did a good job here. It's setting up the storyline, but it's a miniseries, so I kind of expect that. And they've got enough characters, because it's a pretty big cast, that it takes a little bit of time just to bring them all on stage.
Oh, yeah. And Dynamite, they've been a hit or miss. Like, their Battlestar Galactica stuff, the art is so rough in that sometimes it's almost unreadable. And this is better art. I think their best artist they have, they put on Barbarella right now. I don't know if you're reading that.
I am not reading that.
Okay. It's a remake of an old character, but the art in there is probably the best I've seen at Dynamite. It's really good.
Well, at one point, this was one of their higher profile titles.
Oh, okay. So that's why.
That was a decade ago.
Ah. So time to go back to the well.
Well, they had Alex Ross involved in doing covers and stuff like that. As a matter of fact, I think those pages I was talking about with the reference shots of the characters, I think he did those.
Oh, wow.
Obviously not happening here, but they've built up that kind of universe, so I'm happy to see them exploring it again.
Yeah. Are there a lot of these characters out there, these Golden Age characters that are in the public domain?
There's a few dozen that are notable and recognizable. And again, the Terra Obscura stuff, which kind of spun out of or was related to the Tom Strong stuff, that's another that was published through DC Wildstorm or whatever. That's another take on many of these characters.
Okay. Because, you know, it's kind of cool seeing these characters and making them fresh, making them new. And Dynamite's done a good job. Like I said, I read their Solar Man of the Atom, except I think it became a Woman of the Atom.
It did.
And yeah. And then there were some other characters. I can't remember them right now for the life of me. But they've been doing a decent job with them.
The other ones in that group would have been Turok, yep. Magnus, and Dr. Yeah, Magnus Spectre, maybe?
Yep, that's it. And Magnus became a girl, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got to change it up.
I guess.
I don't know. Now they've created a second one.
So I enjoyed this. I thought it was fun. At some point, I need to go back and reread the first two volumes of this stuff. That actually make for a pretty good back issue spotlight at some point.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. And actually, I would be interested in doing that. So if you were wanting to do a back issue spotlight, I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say about these.
Definitely interested. It's a matter of finding the time.
Oh, yeah.
And you finding the issues.
Exactly.
They're somewhere in the back issues I've got.
That's a thing. It's like some stuff I bought, I don't want to dig through it to find issues because it's so unorganized and it's such a massive thing to go through. But I'm like, I know I have the issues in there. Sometimes I'll just be like, oh, I'll buy the collected thing. It's easier to find that book versus those issues.
There are times I have definitely done that. This is stuff that, because it's about 10 years old, should be in the sorted part of my collection.
Makes it easier.
Yeah. My collection sort of falls into three categories. There's the bulk of the collection from, I'm going to say, 2008, 2009-ish earlier that's well organized, just a little physically hard to get to because I've got the other part of the collection blocking it. And then that other part falls into two categories. From around 2011 forward, I've been putting them into numbered boxes that are roughly chronological within that, but I've got that inventoried in the Collector Z comic collector software. But then I've got a couple of year period between that where they're in boxes, but man, if I had to put my hands on some of those particular issues, it would be a fishing expedition.
Exactly. And that's like painful. I don't want to go digging. I'm like, maybe I'll buy it digitally at that point.
It's time consuming and there's enough boxes. It is literally physically painful. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So what kind of score are you going to give this project Superpowers?
I'm going to go with B+. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I want to see where they're going with this. And like I said, I recommend the previous volumes.
Oh, cool. Well, I may check out those previous volumes and I liked it. It made me want to read more issues. So I went with a B.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah. So Dynamite, they've been hit or miss for me with some of their stuff, but it seems like ever since they moved to the front half now, they're kind of cleaning up their act. They're issuing or they're publishing more and more decent material to read.
Well, and they've got some older, it's relative, but they've got some stuff that they haven't been doing of late. Let me put it that way, that they're bringing back. Project Superpowers here is a good example. The Lone Ranger, I'm excited to see that come back. They did some great stuff with that. So I'm happy to see them kind of getting kind of refocused a little bit and doing some stuff that appeals to me.
Oh, yeah. Since they published, since Dynamite started publishing these Golden Age heroes that were in the public domain, now on the comic book publishing side, are they kind of the exclusive publishers going forward?
No.
Okay, so Marvel could go in and say, I want to use these exact same characters and run with it.
Well, and that's kind of what happened 10 years ago when Project Superpowers was coming out, and around the same time, give or take a year, maybe, I forget, Terra Obscura was dealing with very similar characters, if not the same characters.
Ah, so it's kind of like a little bit of a dangerous proposition, because if you don't have the best writer or the best spin on it, someone could come out and just take you down, or if that thing takes off, just say, here's our better art, here's our better writers, if I'm Marvel, and run with it.
Even if you do, it's a matter of, I have the better writers and stuff, it's a matter of, well, somebody else can get it. There's confusion in the marketplace if you're not careful, and there's also a more dangerous kind of problem in terms of, the public domain stuff's the public domain, but that cuts off. Not all of it's in the public domain, so the parts you can reference safely are limited, and you may wind up with a writer who gets confused as to what was in the public domain, what's canon of the official or the original publisher and stuff that's not in the public domain, and what's part of the canon of somebody else who's already dealt with these characters in a different way.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So, yeah, it's kind of – a lot of companies are staying away from this, like I guess bigger publishers, but Dynamite has no problem. They've gone back to this well several times, so I applaud them for doing it because it's kind of cool. I feel like I'm reading some of these Golden Age characters that were created back in the – God knows when, the 30s – or no, probably the 40s.
The 40s.
Yeah, and so they're created in the 40s, but a modern spin on them, which I like.
Yeah, and I give them credit for not only digging back and breathing new life into some of these characters, but doing a good job with it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's pretty cool. And like I said, I might go back and pick up that omnibus depending on my spending habits. But the reason why I was telling you, like, I buy the omnibus and stuff, or the omnibuy, however you want to pronounce them, if there's multiples, is I have such big holes in my reading, you know?
Yeah.
And so filling in the holes with single issues, it started to fill up so much space that I was just like, I'll buy this book. If it's really good stuff, they put out an omnibus, Marvel or DC. And now these other companies have started putting out hardcover collected editions, and they look really nice.
Well, and that's why, like I was saying, I've picked up Superboy and the Legion stuff. I don't have, like, the early Legion individual issues.
Exactly.
They're hard to track down. They're more expensive than I want to pay, and I just want the story.
Exactly.
So and omnibus are great for that.
I agree. So that's kind of what I use it for, and I happen to be buying a heck of a lot more DC ones because my DC holes are much bigger than my Marvel holes in my reading since I didn't read it at all.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so that's why I've been buying so many of them, and I like it. It's just getting time to read all of them. That's the struggle now.
That's where I have some problems too.
Yeah, we're both we can afford to pay more than what we can have time to read.
It's a nice problem to have, but it does get a little frustrating to have a growing amount of stuff to be reading and not being able to chip away at it as much as I'd like.
Exactly. Hey, and just out of curiosity, you know, the Slack channel kind of blew up today on all that Walmart stuff.
Yeah, there was definitely a passionate discussion on that, which was cool.
I was reading that. It was like some back and forth, but it was all civil, but it was really interesting. Have you picked up all just the first issues? Are you on to the second issues?
I have picked up the first issues because I had found them, and I forget which location here in town I found them at. And the problem with that is I haven't been able to find any of them, even the boxes or empty things for them since.
Wow, so they just disappeared.
Well, I think I went to a Walmart I don't normally go to, and that's where I found them.
Okay.
But I don't remember. I need to go through my receipts and figure out, well, these are the ones that had them. Which location was this again?
This is so weird how it's happened. Like, some Walmarts have them, some don't have them. Some people are on issues two. Other ones, it's just restocks of number ones over and over. It's so odd.
Yeah, and it's a little frustrating because I'd like to pick up the next round or two, but it's a hassle.
Yeah, and it's almost like back in the day, the kids who rode their bicycles all over town looking for the issues. Here you are, a grown man, now you'll be driving to 15 Walmarts to track down issue number two.
When I drove to San Diego and back, we would, on the drive out there, just need to stretch our legs and go hit a restroom or whatever. So it was, oh, there's a Walmart coming up. We'll just duck into that. Of course, since we ducked in, I would check the toys. I would check for comics. We'd see if we need snacks or something like that.
Yeah.
And every one of them, sometimes I didn't even find a collectibles aisle. So some didn't even have that. Some had that, but not the comics. Some had that, but the empty box for the comics or display. Some had it, but it only restocked the first issues. But we checked that coming and going. And if it had really been every other week or every 2 weeks like they had originally said, we should have had them by then.
Exactly. So something's off. I don't know what it is.
They were probably just doing a bit slower rollout than they had initially expected or something. And that's not a big deal. But I don't think this is that great outreach that people may hope it is. I'd love to be wrong on that. I'd love for it to be successful. But I think it was a huge mistake for DC to have original content not available to the direct market, which I think is their core customer base.
Agree.
And have that original content in some cases by their premier creators.
Oh, yeah. I found it very strange that they, you know, if Walmart wanted exclusive content, they didn't have to give them Bendis and Tom King, their first issue of this and their first issue of that. They could have picked Rob Williams or, you know, first exclusive issue of whatever the heck they wanted to write. So it's just weird that they took their top hitters and put them out there and then made it difficult, didn't offer it to the direct market. It's just very odd. I don't know why they did it the way they did it.
Again, one of the theories on the Slack channel, and I kind of agree with it, is they wanted those of us hardcore comic fans to go to Walmart and pick them up.
Oh, yeah. And basically, it seems like we are liquidating the supply. We've soaked it all up, and so I guess it's not out there. It's mostly gone. Who knows how many random people picked it up? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't think we're going to see any influx of new readers because I think they're going to have the same problem trying to find that next issue should they go look for it.
Yeah, almost to get this thing to work, if they really wanted to do this and use Walmart as their, you know, whatever, their newsstand, they almost had to come out with a million of those things and just stick them out there at a, you know, super low price, $4.99, and just lambast it with like just tons of material, you know, and then just pulp whatever they didn't sell. And here's the next set of 500,000 of them. But I don't think they printed enough to do that, even to go out to all the stores.
Well, the fact that it didn't go out to all the stores right there, I think, is part of the mistake.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're really looking to bring in a new reading market, you got to hit all the Walmarts, you know, where everyone's going. If you hit, you know, 25% or 10%, it's just not doing it.
Yeah. And to me, this is, I mean, Walmart is the one doing this, but it's not about them. I don't like exclusives to begin with.
Oh, me neither. I hate them. I hate exclusives. I even hate it on the video gaming side. It's frustrating.
Well, I've been picking up the Power Ranger Legacy action figures, and it got to where for the last round or so for them, they were exclusive to multiple different venues.
Yep, and that's frustrating.
GameStop had a few. Walgreens, I think, has a few. Entertainment Earth had one or two. And there's an entire wave, or not wave, but there's an entire set of them that, you know what, I'm not going to get those. It's too much of a pain.
Yeah, it's like you feel like they're treating you like just making you jump through the hoops, and I don't want to jump through hoops. I don't want to play the hunt at Walmart, you know, like the Easter egg hunt at Walmart trying to find that thing. So I'm not doing it. I'll wait for the collected whatever, if they have it, who knows. But it's the same thing, like video game world, you know, when Sony came out with the exclusive Spider-Man game from Marvel. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of Xbox fans were really upset about that. Like, I don't want to buy a new system. I don't want to buy another thing.
Yeah, I think anytime you segment your audience and say, this is for not you.
It's frustrating.
I think you've made a mistake.
I agree. I think everything should be like, you can buy it here, you can buy it there. And I think ultimately it kind of would help sales if you just made it a mass market. You know, you can buy it wherever. You can buy it at Walmart for the random people who walk in there who are not comic fans and kids see them. Make sure they're all the Walmarts. But if they would have had them at the direct market, you wouldn't have had the collectors going and buying them and flipping them all on eBay.
Yeah, the whole flipping them, be it on a store wall or on eBay, I'm not into that. I don't think that's good, but I get why people do it.
Yeah.
To me, it's that hassle of acquisition that I don't like.
Yeah, me too. I just like to be able to buy something easily. Just tell me where it is. I will pick it up. But don't make me have to drive around to 57 places because you only stock 10% of the stores.
Well, and don't make me have to split where I'm making my purchases.
Exactly. I just want to buy it from Eric and have it show up at my doorstep. Nice and easy.
To go to Walmart in most places is going to cost you, I'm going to say, at least 10 minutes.
Oh, easily.
And yeah, that's... just from the time you drive into the parking lot and drive out. Even if all you do is go in, tag, you know, wherever they've got the shopping carts or, you know, whatever, once you're in the store, if you will, and turn around.
Oh, yeah. The one by me, I mean, they have several I could drive to, but the one that's closest to me, it is continually, the parking lot is full. You know, it's a line of traffic making turns into there. You get your car dinged every time you park there because there's so many people there, and then just aisles and aisles of people. I'm like, I don't want to fight through that just to get a comic. I'm like, no, thank you.
even if they had ample parking and whatnot, it's a big enough parking lot. You're going to have to walk a little bit. It's a big store. You're going to have to walk a little bit in there. It's not I can duck in and duck out in 2 minutes flat.
Yeah, and the Walmart sales rep is not going to help you find them.
No, not at all.
They'll be like, we sell comics? What? Huh? What?
So I think they should have made it easier to find or non-exclusive content if they were indeed trying to reach out to new readers. And if they were doing that, they should have had a better way to turn those into regular comic book readers, like restocking the stuff on a regular basis, making it obvious when and where they were going to be available, and not make me wonder, it's like, well, I've heard they're at Walmart, but I don't see them. They must not exist.
Yeah, exactly. They were talking about the second issue was out, and I was like, huh, I haven't seen any second issues, but some people are saying they're starting to trickle out. Who knows? And right now, it's just a mystery.
Again, that's to me, that's the crux of the problem.
Yeah, it's so mysterious.
I never liked having to go chase around various spinner racks to go find the one comic I needed, and I don't like it here either.
Hey, they're making it nostalgic, right?
No, not really. Annoying and nostalgic, like, not the same.
Exactly. Just because I had to do it that way does not mean I enjoyed doing it that way.
Exactly.
Hey, so you said that we were going to be doing some switch-ups with, like, I know this will come out after we do the preview spotlight. What were you going to be changing up?
All right,
for
so
the next one?
Let's go through the rundown of things in chronological order, ending with that switch-up stuff, just to let people know. So first off, this goes up right after the preview spotlight deadline for August has passed. That means we're going to have the comic book page teleconference on August 18th at 7 p.m. Central Time. Who knows? Maybe the Walmart thing will come up as a point of discussion. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Call in and find out. Call in and find out if I can stay connected. I've been having problems with that. So there's that. The people who are laughing now are probably Sam, TJ, and you, because you know how many times my call drops on some of these things. Anyways.
I think we dropped like 8 times on this recording.
Pretty much. It's kind of frustrating.
Yes.
August 22nd, that is a Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central Time. There is the comic book shop talk with the guys at Cowabunga. It's going to be on Skype. It's going to be fun. They're going to answer questions about their store, what retailers think, or whatever comes up. I'm looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
After that, the next thing on the list is Sunday, September 2nd at the crack of dawn is the deadline for the second question and answer questions to be submitted. Again, I'm going to use that in October. I've got October's getting to be a fairly busy time for me, and we'll get to more on that in a sec. Which is why the deadline's so much earlier than when the episode's going to go up. That and gives me time to think of good answers, or at least funny answers. We've got a thread on the forum for the Q&A, and again, whatever questions you've got, be it around what I read, what I don't read, what I like, what I don't like, what I watch on TV, the numbers, the podcast, comics in general, whatever. Put it up there as a question. Worst case, I'll say, you know, I don't really have an answer for that and move on. Best case, I give you a wonderful answer.
Sounds good.
So all of that leads up to Saturday, September 8th. The morning of that Saturday morning is going to be the deadline for the September preview spotlight and, in an unusual and unexpected twist, and the October spotlight. But John, how can we do that? We don't have the October previews. You know what? You're right. So for September, we're going to do the regular kind of clips. You go through previews, you find the issue, you tell us why it's a great one to jump onto, you sell us on that, you're good. Okay, so as usual, post on the thread for that what you're going to do and stuff. We're changing it up for October, and the reason we're doing this is I wanted to get the episode out on the regular schedule, but I'm kind of unavailable between the time previews comes out and that point, so it's, oh, we're going to have to do this early. So, for October, and this is October only, and we may do something like this again in the future, but this is not a change in format permanently, it's just for the 1 month. It's going to be one clip per person, and answer the question, what current titles should people be reading and why? Now, if that's one title, if that's 20 titles, have at it. Tell us what you think we should be reading and why. There's no time limit on this, but keep in mind, we usually have, I don't know, 8 or 9 people submitting. So, I mean, don't do like an hour-long dissertation on why the X-Men is an underrated franchise and you should read. Now, I mean, if you feel that way, that's great. But sell people on the concept and figure, because we're doing one clip per person, I haven't figured out the show notes format. I may do time codes to where if people say, you know, I've had enough of that person, I'm going to move on. So keep people engaged. And this is a great chance to not have to worry about, geez, this isn't a good jumping on point, or I think you should start at the beginning, whatever. If it's a current title that you really think people would love, sell it to us. Now,
cool.
Other twists we're going to do, you can recommend as many titles as you want, one clip, total for you, not one clip per title. Don't post these on the forum. Let it be a surprise for the listeners, like yourself,
like
as
that.
To what everyone else picked. I think it's a great way, because I was thinking about this, and I'm like, well, geez, if they put it on the forum and or on Slack, for that matter, and say, well, I did this, here's why you should read it, why listen to the episode?
Exactly. You're just going to say, read X-Men. Yeah, okay. No, I like that. It's going to be very surprising as we get into listening to the podcast, and I have no clue what Sam's going to recommend. I have no clue what Drew's going to recommend, or what Eric's going to recommend, or whoever, Alien Al, whatever they're going to say, or Jason in Hawaii. And he may have two things, three things, but tell me why you like it. Like you said, don't give us a background of everything about the character and the history of Superman and when he came to Earth the first time and what issue number and all this. Just give us why it's great and why we should read it. I love it. This is going to be cool.
If somebody comes up and say, oh, should I be reading and why? You don't know them and you can't really ask too much about them because, well, it's a podcast. It's one-way communication, unfortunately. This is your chance to answer that.
I'm excited. I think this is going to be fun.
I think it'll be fun, too, and I'm curious if we're going to have a lot of the same titles being picked and we realize, wow, this is really more popular than I thought or something, or if it's just really diverse and very little overlap.
Huh, me too. Because since we don't know what we're saying, if you know 100 people are picking the same book, we all better be reading that book. But this could be – I'm excited just to see how it goes, see how it plays.
Now, if you've never sent a clip in for the preview spotlight, this is your chance to do so. You don't need previews. You don't need to know page numbers. You don't need to know anything. Just what are you reading and why should we check it out?
I mean, I think it's awesome.
There's no excuse not to send in a clip for this one. And that's also part of why I'm going to need a little extra time maybe to edit this, is I don't know how long this is going to be. If it's just a crazy turnout, maybe this is two episodes. Don't know. Now, obviously, the naming convention, which some people are still struggling with, so I may try to simplify that for the September one. It may just go, hey, if it's previews, start with a lowercase p. If it's DC previews, start with a lowercase d. If it's Marvel, start with an m. I'll figure out where they go and then do a three-digit page number, dash, whatever you're doing, and include issue numbers if you're doing an issue, because sometimes there's a trade and it's a little hard to find out. Anyways, and then a dash in your name. That's for September. For October, go with your name, dash, October 2018.
That's it. No page numbers, no nothing, no previews required. Just have fun.
And that way, I don't even know until I'm listening as to what you've picked.
I think it's going to be awesome. I'm kind of excited for October more than any other preview spotlight.
Should be fun. And again, September 8th is the deadline for both of those.
Cool.
Now, I'll probably play the clips in the order they're received, unless there's some brilliant reason not to that I have yet to come up with, which means there probably won't be. And then November, we're going to go back to the regular schedule and plan of just, hey, what's in previews and stuff like that. And that one is probably going to wind up being, I'm going to say November 10th, but I could be wrong looking that far out. I think the previews will come out on Halloween in October, but we'll figure that out. And obviously what this means is, since you will have sent in your clips for October already, you all get a month off.
Nice. Which would be cool.
I'm taking some time off. I figured I'd let you guys take some time off. That's the kind of guy I am.
And we just happened to sync up with our vacations, which is perfect.
Yeah, should be fun. So yeah, again, we've got, like I said, the Cowcast, the Cowabunga Shop Talk episode coming up on the 22nd. We've got the Q&A deadline on September 2nd. We've got the comic page teleconference on August 18th. And again, the preview spotlight deadline for both the September and October ones on September 8th. Please participate in this stuff, because really, I love hearing from you guys and knowing what you guys are reading and stuff.
I agree. It's one of my favorite things. I love going through previews and reading what everyone tells me to read, you know, checking it out. But I'm so excited for this October one and just hearing, hopefully, new people calling in who don't even buy previews, just tell me what they think is cool that they're reading. It's going to be awesome.
It's a chance to really kind of showcase your interest in what's out there. This is the sort of thing, we've done a similar thing on the year-end spotlights, and it's gotten me to pick up a number of titles I wasn't. And I've enjoyed a lot of them.
Awesome.
So anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time for Sandman Universe number 1 from DC, Fantastic Four number one from Marvel, and Black Badge number one from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.